We've got 9 weeks to cover 150 chapters. You want to divide that out? I think it's 20 chapters a week or something like that. And last week we covered one verse. So we're on a roll as far as I'm concerned in relationship to this. And it's difficult for me to know exactly how to teach a book of Psalms. It's just it's so big. And I study the Bible, and it's difficult for me to conceptualize it, look at whole books and things of that nature. Somebody asked a pygmy, how do you eat an elephant? And one little pygmy ate an elephant. They asked him, how you did it? And he said, somebody said over here, one bite at a time, and that's the way you do it. That's the only way you do it. And in relationship to knowing the Bible. And so when I study the book of Psalms, I think, well, I got to teach that, and I've got to teach this, and I've got to teach this, and I've got to teach that. So right now, and I may change my mind next week about how to address this and how to develop it, but I want to spend the last part of the chapter looking at my favorite verses from the first 20 Psalms. And we won't be able to look at all of the favorite verses by any means, but you think about what is the intent of this class. What's it all about? Is it to make us scholars about Psalms? There's a way that you could do that. And so we talked last week about the authorship of the Psalms and about some of those notations that precede the chapters and the verses and where they come from and the importance or the lack of importance of all of those things. We talked about the Psalms being divided by God into 150 chapters. He's the one who makes chapters divisions. It's the only part of the Bible where God makes the chapter divisions. And so, you know, that's important in and of itself. But then the very nature and the order in which these books appear in the Psalms appear together. Why is this Psalm after that Psalm and this one after the other one? And so they are categorized, and we will probably look at a section of the Psalms and the heading of those Psalms, a Psalm of Ascent. I don't know if you read those headings at the head of the chapters, but you get over to about chapter 120, and sometimes those notations that are there says a Psalm of Ascent. What's that all about? Evidently, there are about 8 or 10 Psalms in that part of the Bible that were a part of the Bible study they did on the way to worship God at the temple. And so here's the temple. It's on that highest mountain. And as they went toward Jerusalem, just like, as you go toward Belgrade, at the elevation that Belgrade has, it must be, 8 feet above sea level or something, that high elevation. But 20 miles away, you can see Belgrade. Now then, go over to the biblical lands, and here's Mount Zion. Here's those mountains of Jerusalem. And sitting right on the top of one of the highest mountains there is the temple. Now that temple's covered with gold. Can you imagine what the sunlight looked like as you were traveling toward that? And so there are these psalms that were psalms they sang and robbing some terms that some people don't even like, on their way to church. It's what they did on their way to worship God. And those are called Psalms of Ascent. And we've got to spend some time looking at that. But I want to spend in an introductory way thinking about God preparing a man so he could write that part of the Bible. You just stop and think about what's Luke's occupation? He's a doctor. You know, there's a reason why we have a medical doctor right in the book of Luke. I mean, there's all kinds of reason. The reason is God picked him. But one of the internal evidences of the inspiration of the Bible to study, if you really want to do some study, is the medical language of Luke. Luke uses terminologies, uses medical terms that nobody else uses. I mean, he writes like a doctor. And so he says it was his right hand that was withered in that particular sickness and everything. He may not be the only one. But Luke is a doctor, and so there's that medical language that is involved. So you've got Luke. What about Paul? What's his background? Why did Paul write half of the New Testament? Yeah, he's a religious leader. I mean, he's a scholar. And so whenever you read Romans or when you read Galatians, it's like, Tim, it's like reading a legal brief sometimes, you know. It takes a... You know, he writes four chapters before he puts a period in there. And it's sort of these things that you do as you're writing a legal paper, whereas. And the Bible needs those kinds of things that are found in it. And I think that's important for us to understand God preparing somebody. God needed to understand that he was a shepherd. Well, Paul could have written, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." Doesn't have the same meaning. Why? Because here is a shepherd writing the book. Here's a shepherd writing the shepherd's psalm. And so God selected men to write the Bibles. Now then, if I ask you to describe David in one brief sentence or one brief phrase, how would you describe David? Okay, what else? How else would you describe David? There's 20 different adjectives. You think about him fighting Goliath, what are you going to think of? Well, that's different, isn't it? You think about him when his son dies, that's different. You think about him whenever he has a chance to kill King Saul, that's different. The Lord told Samuel, "I have selected a man after my own heart." Now, folks, that's got to be in the Bible. It's a phrase found more than once in the Bible. And we ought to stop long enough to think about, as a man thinks in his heart, so is he. We are allowed in the Psalms of David to see the heart of God. And I don't believe we ought to ever study the book of Psalms without understanding that David, who said, "Let the words of my mouth," and what? We sing that song, right? You can do that one day. "Let the words of my mouth," what? "And the meditation of my heart be acceptable unto thee, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer." What about this? Thy word have I hid in my heart. Why? That I might not sin against thee. You want to have a heart like David? You want to set a goal in your life of the way that people, when they look at you, ought to think about what they're like? My dad was not the most sinless man that ever lived. But when I think about my dad, my remembrance of my own father is a man after God's own heart. And I don't know, I didn't see that when I was a child, by the way. But as an adult, looking back at the way you handle everything that happened in his life, I thought, that's a great phrase. Who do I know of all the people I've ever known on this earth that I'd use that phrase to describe? A man after God's own heart. How do you do it? As a man thinks in his heart, so is he. You let me inside the memory bank of your head and let me know what you've been thinking about this last week. And I'll tell you what you're like. That's what that verse says. Out of the abundance of the heart, what happens? The mouth speaks. Keep thy heart with all diligence. That's a more difficult one. Out of it are the issues of life. Life issues forth from your heart. And so, in the book of Psalms, God prepared a man. Do you know how much of the Bible tells about the life of David? Where's David first mentioned in the Bible? In what book? Did somebody say 1 Samuel? In 1 Samuel. Sometimes in my mind, I've renamed the books of the Bible. Is that interesting? In my mind, 1 Samuel is 1 David. He fights Goliath, you know? And so that's where we first read about David at all. Way back in, you know, chapter 6, 7, and 8, all of a sudden, God's fed up with King Saul. And so he tells Samuel to go down to the house, because I've selected a man, I want you to anoint that man to be king. That's David. God gave Saul a king like they wanted. They wanted a king who would go before them in battle. That's exactly what they asked for. And sometimes you get what you better be careful what you ask for. You better be careful what you ask for. Yes, Jim. He's what? Yes. Yeah, and that's King Saul. And David was playing the harp for the king and everything. And that interaction in the book of 1 David tells you so much about David. Now, the second book where you read about David is a book that I think of as 2 David. You may call it 2 what? 2 Samuel. It's 2 David to me. Why? Because 1 Samuel is boy David. 2 Samuel is King David. And you look at all of the interaction that David has. Now then, to know somebody historically is not to really know them. Isn't that funny? Think of television. Think of characters on television. Think of movie stars. Think of Hollywood. You really think you know the hearts of those people? You really think you know where the politicians in this land are coming from? You know, I mean, you just stop and tell me. I mean, you can't. I'm not asking what your political persuasion is. I just know that what's this all about? By the way, if you serve in the House for one day, you get a guaranteed annual income. Is it $279,000 a year or $179,000 a year? Yeah, it's a bundle anyway. For serve one day and then get kicked out for being a criminal, you've got a guaranteed life income for $179,000. Can I tell you how to have an easy retirement? Lie like a politician. You know, I mean, that just. But you understand. You know those folks? No. But here is David. And think of the details we know about his life. But the difference in the David that would come out of Hollywood or the David that would come out of Washington is that we have this book that allows us to see David. Jim, you mentioned about David playing the harp. Was he a musician? Yeah, evidently one of the best. Whenever he played the harp, it drove that evil spirit that came upon King Saul. It soothed that evil spirit. Who better than a musician to write psalms? But not just write the melody of psalms, to write the words of the psalms. Is David poetic? Yeah. I mean, you stop and think. If you got the ability to write the music and make the music fit the song, I find it amazing. In our songbook, there are songs that we sing that the music doesn't fit the melody. I don't know if you feel that way, but okay. And then there are songs that the words don't fit the melody. And then all of a sudden, there is that special song that comes along that when you sing it, it just grabs your heart. And it really, really touches your heart. And that's what David does. God needed a shepherd. He needed a poet. And so, you know, God just didn't take, God could have made, I don't mean it's disrespectful, but God could have made Balaam's ass write the book of Psalms. If God can make that donkey talk, he can make the donkey write the book of Psalms. But there's difference in the Psalms of a donkey in the Psalms of David. Did David have adversity in his life? Mm-hmm. Almost throughout all of his life. Find me that period of peace in David's life. When did he have it? When he killed Goliath? How long did that last? how long is it, from one chapter to another? How many chapters is it before he's now in King Saul's presence, and a man that's head and shoulders, physically looks like a king, head and shoulders above anybody there, has a javelin in his hands trying to pin you against the wall. You think he's pretty good at it? Yeah, Saul has killed his thousand and almost killed his 1,001 when he pinned David to the wall. Have adversity? Well, not really. You think about after he became king, just turmoil after turmoil, and even before he becomes king, Saul trying to kill him. And then all of a sudden he becomes king, and then there's rebellion, trouble with his own family. Yeah, had it ever been. And David says, look at my heart. And that's why if we make this class practical, when you are in the pits of despair, read the Psalms. Chris, there were times when we were in New Zealand in the mission field. I don't know where to go. David's been there. And the words of the Psalms had problems in your family. You don't know what you're going to do, which way to turn. Yeah, been there. How are you going to make it? Get in the Psalms. And if there's anything that comes out of us in this class, I don't want us to walk out of here being knowledgeable about the Psalms. The story is told of a great orator that at some public gathering got up and read the 23rd Psalm. And when he finished, there was a standing ovation given to him. And as a mockery, they ask a man who's almost a high school dropout, just as a joke, "Hey, Bob, come on up here and read this." And Bob, who'd had tremendous adversity in his life, got up and read the book of Psalms. And when he finished, there was no standing ovation. People were sobbing. What just happened? One man knew the 23rd Psalm. The other man knew the shepherd. And as I try to think about covering 150 Psalms, what are we going to do? Approach it intellectually? Yeah, we'll spend the first several minutes each week talking about it. But I want you to know the psalmist. And then I want you to know the real author of the book of Psalms. The words that are in the book of Psalms were words that a shepherd boy who became one of the most powerful men in all the world, and he's had the same heart as a king that he had as a shepherd, had put the words of God in his heart. And he wrote them down so they could help us. And so, I can't believe the time. Let's open them up. Let's go to the book of Psalms. And let's look at verses in the Psalms. And if you were teaching this section of this, you might choose to get to an entirely different section of the Psalms from where I'm going to go right now. I think there's something to be said about Psalms 1. And looking in Psalms 1, and we introduce chapter 1, verse 1. We'll look at verse 2. Verse 2 describes this man that is blessed. And that word blessed is this man that is happy. Happy is this man. And look at verse 2 says, or maybe it's the latter part of verse 1. His delight is in the law of the Lord. And on his law he meditates day and night. You know the words of beer commercials. Isn't that amazing? Don't you wish that we had embedded in our heart phrases from the book of Psalms that we knew as well as we knew the beer commercials? And there are other illustrations of that, but things that we meditate. Psalms 2. Psalms 2 is an important psalm because it's quoted in the New Testament. And it talks about the heathen that are raging and the kings of the Lord, kings of this earth, mocking the God of heaven. Is that happening in this land? Did you see that post on Facebook this week of somebody who had reposted an article, "Can Women Be Pastors?" And Facebook took it off, saying it was hate words. It's hard to imagine anybody reading those verses that say, "Let your women keep silence in the church, and this is the commandment of God." For those who control the thoughts of America, to read at least the application of it. I never read the article. It may have been written in such a way. But they would deem that, in view of all of this trash that is permitted on Facebook. Why do the heathen rage? Why do they stand up against that which is godly and righteousness? And Psalms 2 says, the Lord laughs, sits in heaven and he laughs at them. There's the anointed one of Jesus. And this very psalm, by the way, when the church had just begun, and in Acts chapter 4, Peter and John have been arrested. Who's Peter and John? Are they not, as Paul describes them, those who are pillars in the church? And Peter and John, the pillars in the church, Acts chapter 3, performed that miracles, and there's unbelievable joy, and now all of a sudden, Acts 3 and Acts 4, they are arrested. And if the leaders of Christianity are going to be arrested, and the church comes together, how are you going to handle that, church? Guess where they go? Psalms 2. The Son of Man reigns. And if there's anything that you and I, that will help us live with peace, did David have peace in his heart? You know what he named his son? Shalom. There's another way to say Solomon is Shalom. You know what that means? Peace. And so here's the church. And the church is filled with anxiety. You got that phone call from loved ones in distant places? You get that bad message back from the doctor? And he says, maybe 3 months. I've done all I can do to help you. How do you deal with it? God's on a throne. And let Facebook do what it wants to. Let Hollywood destroy the minds and the moral values of every young person in this land. And we sit back and we feel hopeless beyond all measure. And here's the entity. The Lord is in His holy temple. He's on a throne. And when the heathen rage, verse 4? He who sits in heaven laughs. And if God can see how small heathen ragings are, and if the early church felt overwhelmed when the Sanhedrin has now arrested Peter and John, and in the very next chapter they're going to come back to where the church is, having been beaten. And by the way, when they walked away beaten, they rejoiced that they were worthy to suffer for Jesus. When we suffer, anybody says something to us about being a Christian, what do we do? It is the depths of depression. Why do they just treat me like that? You know, I just don't understand that. Nobody's interested. And they laughed at me. And, yeah. They rejoiced that they were able to suffer. You know why? It's because of the concept in Psalms 2. Wow. Psalms 3. Somebody read that last verse. Read it out good and loud. Who's got a strong voice? Andy, you got it open? Psalms 3. Psalms 4. The last verse in Psalms 4. Read it so we can hear it. What?
Number 8.
Yes, out loud.
I will both lie down in peace and sleep. For you alone, O Lord, make me dwell in safety.
Can't sleep at night? You're getting old? That older lady said she had 3 companions. Charlie, Arthur, and Ben. Charlie Horse. Arthritis and Ben Gay. You know what I'm talking about. I will lay me down in night and sleep. Who writes this? A man never had a problem in his life? A man who had the Jewish army out trying to chase him through the wilderness of Judea and the mountains of Judea and hiding in a cave. That man who, whenever he went down to where the Philistines was, he was so threatened by the anger of the king of Philistia that he foamed at the mouth and as it were, clawed the wall, acting like he was a crazy man. How you going to sleep, David? My God makes me to dwell safely. Why don't you learn that like you know beer commercials? You understand what I'm talking about? We sing the jingles of beer commercials. Maybe we don't, Helen. Helen looks at me like I'm crazy right now. But you understand what I'm talking about? What if you wrote that on a little card and put it on your refrigerator? I will lay me down in sleep and rest at peace. Because God makes me to dwell safely. Is that pretty good? Yeah.
It's like the children's prayer.
Yeah. Thank you. It's a man after God's own heart, isn't it? It's a man after God's own heart. I hate clocks. I hate clocks. We may have to come back and cover some of these verses later. Can you look at chapter 8? We've got to skip 5, 6, and 7. But look at 8. O Lord, our Lord. You want to read that slow enough to hear what you just read, what I just read? Oh God, my God. Is that different? We just read it too fast. And the word Lord there being in all capital letters, look at the capital R, the capital D in the word Lord. That's the first time the word Lord appears in that verse. That's the name Jehovah. Jehovah my Lord. All that Jehovah is. What name shall I give them? Moses says, when I get back to the land of Egypt, what shall I tell them is your name? The God of thunder, the God of war, the God of, and you put it in there, tell me the name that will be the most apt to describe Jehovah God. I am. And that's an abbreviation of the word Jehovah. And I love the translation there in the book of Exodus. I am that I am. I am who I am. I am what I am. You know who is God? He's the I am. You name everything that is infinite in this world, and every quality that is infinite belongs to God. That's the I am. And that's my God. How excellent is your name, pardon me, in all the earth. And then in the midst of this psalm, he says, when I consider the heavens, verse 3, the works that you've made, when I consider the moon and the stars which you've created, which you've ordained, I can do something with this verse that you cannot do because my name rhymes with man. When I consider the magnitude of the works that you've made, who's Dan that you're mindful of him? Would you put your name in that verse? You know how big this universe is? As the ancient Greeks and the Romans, 3,000 stars. How would you like to be an astronomer without a telescope counting how many stars there are, and whenever every month you've got a different group of stars? And then you've got all of these stars. Many of them stay in the same place, and they're these stars that just jump all about, and they name them wanderers. You know what the word wanderers is? It's the word planet. And so they were describing these stars that tonight are here, and then they're here, and then they're here, and then they're here. All those other stars, and this one moves, and it moves, and they call those planets, and that means wanderers. And so now we learn about the Milky Way. Is it my eyesight has failed, or is it that the atmosphere was much clearer when I was young? Could look up and see the Milky Way when I was a kid. I don't know if you've ever been able to look in the heavens. I think it's pollution. I know it's my eyesight's not what it used to be. But you see the Milky Way. You could just see that band of stars that were across there. And that's one little tiny galaxy of 100 million. It's 100 billion galaxies. And each galaxy has 100 million, 100 billion stars. And right out here on one, not the biggest star there's ever been, called the sun, is a little, fourth rock from the sun? Is it third rock? Fourth rock? Third rock from the sun, okay. Yeah, the fourth rock is red, okay, red rock. And so you got the third rock from the sun. And how big am I on this one little rock compared to the magnitude of the heavens of God? My God. When I consider the heavens that you've made, why bother with me? And the truth in it, there's not one ounce of goodness in us that obligates God to be mindful of us. Could I say that again? There's not one ounce of goodness in us that merits and obligates God to be nice to us and loving. You got a barrel of rotten apples? You got a half of an apple that's not rotten in the bottom of that barrel, every the rest of them are rotten. What are you going to do with the whole bucket of them? They're out of here. And you look at when God looks down this little third rock from the sun, and God is sick. And here we are, just trying to live right and do right. When I consider the heavens that thou hast made, what's Dan that you're mindful of him? I cannot get over that illustration that I've used. I don't know of a better one on this earth. Oh, how busy heaven's got to be. I know it's not this way. It's my kindergarten brain. That's all I've got. It's a little kindergarten grasp of God sitting on the throne and all of these messages coming in from all of the angels. And there's a tornado here, and there's this going on here, and there's this, and there's this, and this, and this, and this. And if it happens on this rock, what about if there are places, other places? I don't know. But all of a sudden, somebody got to keep all the planets in the place and make sure the comet doesn't hit the earth. You understand what I mean? And God's up there on the throne. And so when I become God, I am absolutely overwhelmed with everything that's coming in. And then all of a sudden, this is not the way it happens. It's the only way I can get a handle on it. All of a sudden, God screams with a heavenly voice, "Stop!" And every messenger that had been approaching his throne, he said, "That's not important. My son Dan is praying to me right now." And that's what you did when your kid was hurt. It's all that mattered. I don't care what was happening at work. I don't care what was going on. I don't care. All of a sudden, my child needs me. And a group of mothers in a room, and some child, their four or five kids, six, eight or kids in another room are playing outside, and one little child cries out. And not every mother, but one mother jumps up and runs to that child. "My child's hurting. My child needs me right this minute." And God says, "Stop. My son's praying to me." David, kill Saul like you killed Goliath. He doesn't even know you're hidden back in the back side of this cave. You walk up there, and the man that's ready to take your life, kill him. And David had one rule in his life. Do right. "I will both lay me down and sleep and rest." You think David slept well that night? Yeah. And God let David have those trials and gave us the details of every one of those trials because he wanted to prepare us a man so when we read these words, we're not listening to Balaam's donkey give the words of God. We're hearing the words of somebody who is aching and their heart is breaking. And he'll say later in this psalm, and the tears are collected by God and put in a bottle in heaven. Nobody else sees them, but God keeps them in a bottle in heaven. And David said, I've written these things down. You can put these words in your heart. Folks, let's read the Psalms. I covered 8 Psalms out of 150. I'm only 40 Psalms behind. You are dismissed.